You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason Cutter here, back with another episode of Business Broker Growth Show. I got a special guest, Eric J. Gall. He is the founder and broker Edison Business Advisors. I'm excited because we're going to have a great conversation about business brokerage. It's also fascinating because so far, Eric, you are the closest geographical guest to me that I've had on the show. We're both in Southwest Florida. We're still doing this remote, but it's fascinating to have you so close. So Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason. Happy to be here. I think I need to get a studio like yours.
Well, we can work that out. I've thought about it at times of having the studio that people will get and then they have guests come to them and so virtual and people everywhere. It's just fascinating because I rarely have somebody that's so close. Like we literally could have done this in person. And of course, right now it's middle of July. We're both experiencing the same Southwest Florida heat, which that's fine. We're indoors. It's okay. So let's kick this off today because I think it's a fascinating place to start. I think it's always valuable to start with the evolution of you as a business broker. So you were an executive in the past that then you ended up in M&A. Talk about that, especially as how it shaped you as a business broker.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you go back through kind of my history, there are a lot of lessons learned along the way. I spent 17 years at Ford Motor Company, and the second half of those I spent in the business office. And while I was in the business office, the vast majority of that time was spent on post-merger integration work, because Ford at the time had purchased Jaguar, Land Rover, Volvo, Ford, and Mazda. So I was charged with managing a team that integrated, you know, all those different automotive companies. For better or worse, it was quite the challenge. But during that time, also when things kind of moved along and we were progressing fairly well, the internet bubble hit and Ford had purchased, you know, a handful of smaller businesses that were internet technology related. And there was really no purpose for them after the internet bubble. They found that a lot of the stuff that they purchased was, you know, highly speculative and, you know, just didn't have that extra value to them, you know, that they thought it might have before when they made the acquisition. So some of those crossed my desk and they asked me to package them up and sell them to either private equity groups, high net worth individuals, just depending on the size of the acquisition. So having that task, I needed to learn how to package up a business to market it and sell it. So in order to do that, I started calling up private equity groups in Southeast Michigan and saying, hey, you know, what do you look for in a business, you know, that's being marketed for sale, you know, as far as a pitch book, you know, what's that look like? What are you really looking for? What questions do you want answered in it? You know, bought a few lunches, you know, they provided me some samples and, you know, that kind of got me hooked on, you know, that side of, you know, the M&A world from post-merger. You know, basically to, hey, let's package up and sell businesses. So from there, you know, I, in, what was it, 2006, had a couple of fellow employees ask me if I wanted to participate in the acquisition of some businesses. And I said, sure, why not? Let's try it. And oddly enough, there came across everyone's desk in Ford Motor Company, pretty much the opportunity to take a buyout package. You know, we had a couple of opportunities identified, you know, for acquisition. My intent was not to leave Ford, not to move, but to participate in those acquisitions. But, you know, at the time I was like, hey, you know, maybe I should just take the challenge, you know, take that leap of faith and, you know, try entrepreneurship through ownership, right? So we did that, you know, and I took the buyout. I had to negotiate it. It wasn't easy, but I had to negotiate one. They didn't really want to give me one, which, you know, felt good, but at the time, but, you know, I took that leap of faith. So then the oil shack hit. You know, there wasn't enough money to go around for all of us to survive at a level we've become accustomed to. So we needed to sell off those assets. Obviously, I was the one who had the most experience packaging stuff up and selling it. So I stayed in Florida, where we made most of the purchases, packaged them up, and sold them while everybody else went back to corporate America. While I did that, I was like, hey, I should just do this for other people. Let's hang a shack. Found out that I needed to get a real estate license to do so in Florida, and I needed to hang that with another broker. So I did. I hung that with a gentleman by the name of Bert Risden, who was one of the founding fathers of business brokerage in the state of Florida. Also, you know, had Michigan roots like I did. So we got along great. Did that for 5 years. I worked for him. Then decided to hang my own shingle back in 2014. So separated, created Edison Business Advisors, and have not looked back.
How, I'm curious, through all of that, so the Ford post-merger integration, like all that's got to be fascinating. Like, I'd love to know more about that some other time, get together over coffee, because that seems fascinating. To the buying of your own, to the packaging up and selling your own, how has that, or how did that shape you going into business brokerage? And then I'll make it as a two-part question. How did that shape what how you approach things? And then over the last X number of years of doing it, what else have you learned, or how have you evolved?
Well, you know, I think it was a great experience, because the one thing it's developed, you know, for me is empathy with business owners. I've walked in their shoes. You know, for the first-time seller or even a multi-time seller, you know, I've done it, you know, for myself. So I've been in their shoes, and I, you know, respect what they've done. I, you know, try to do, you know, everything I possibly can to get them, you know, a fair price, best price. I do what I can to package up the business as well or better than any of my competition. I think that's critical in today's environment. And I'm going to say it's critical not only just to get the business sold, but to not waste a seller's time or my time, which is precious as well. And when you go the extra mile in preparing the materials, when you ask the extra questions and you put that into, you know, what's called, you know, a confidential information memorandum, you know, for a buyer, you know, you're not spending a ton of time answering, you know, the same questions over and over. I'm not answering them. And then when the buyer and sellers meet, you know, the seller's not answering them. We found that since we've gone to, you know, a very, very extensive confidential information memorandum, along with a seller interview, similar like what we're doing, just me asking them a bunch of questions and asking a buyer to, you know, read the sim before we talk to them, and watch the video before we talk to them. Like, the average time of a single buyer seller meeting, introductory meeting, you know, which a lot of them are done on Zoom now, has gone from about an hour and 15 minutes to 25.
Wow.
When you multiply that by 10 or 20 buyers on some of these deals, you know, the time savings is incredible. The appreciation that we get from the buy side on having thorough information, you know, is very well appreciated, because it saves them a lot of time. I mean, there's a lot of businesses out there, you know, you see, you know, that say entrepreneur through ownership programs right now are telling people, hey, buy the HVAC company, buy the landscaping company, buy any home services company, right? Because you have that repetitive revenue. Now, great idea, but the problem that a lot of these buyers have when they contact me is they don't have the experience, they don't have the knowledge, and they don't have the license. And if they don't, and if it's something that's, you know, very sophisticated, for example, I have one right now that we have under escrow. And that business, you know, it's a longtime landscape architect who does business with, you know, $5 million to $50 million homeowners in Southwest Florida. Mm-hmm. You know, the typical maintenance, you know, contract that this gentleman has with his clients is $5,000 a month. So when you're looking at that business and you're looking at the expectations of the clients, you know, a new buyer better be a landscape architect or pretty established landscape designer. And then, you know, they're going to, or the customers aren't going to respect them and they'll lose the customer. They're going to need to have the licensing in place in order to, you know, qualify for an SBA loan. And I went back and I ran the numbers on it, and I put the information in the ad. Out of 250 inquiries that I got, I think in the first 2 weeks on that business, there might have been five people who were qualified.
Wow. To buy.
So, you know, it's important to, you know, be very thorough in the information communication. Saves a ton of time. You know, most of these people, I would just send them a polite note saying, hey, you know, here's the qualifications that you're going to need for this business because of its uniqueness. And, you know, here's the licensing that you're going to need to obtain in order to qualify for an SBA loan. If that's the route you're going. I looked at your information, you know, just need to know if I'm missing something, you know. And sometimes they came back and said, oh, you know what? I do have design experience. Here's my design experience. You know, I don't necessarily have the licensing, but, you know, maybe I could rent a license, or maybe the seller would stay on with their licensing until I can get mine. And, you know, those people, we continued the conversation, you know, but a lot of people just bowed out gracefully and said, hey, if you get something that's, you know, not this specialized, you know, let's chat.
So I love all of that. And for people tuning in audio, they can't see it. Obviously, if you're watching the video, you can see behind Eric has a large wall of plaques. So some things are working over the years for you and by extension for your clients. And I know that's true. In thinking about what you've built, obviously from the perspective of being that business owner that's, you know, bought and then sold, has a business selling it, like you've been on both sides of the table. And then this whole process that you built, why do you think other brokers, many brokers, lots of brokers skip those steps, don't do that kind of work? Because I'll tell you, from all the brokers I've talked to, I don't hear that level done a lot in the prep and then also the, you know, the process.
Well, let's just take a look at the business brokerage industry. And I kind of put brokers into three different buckets.
Okay.
You know, the first bucket is, you know, the person who's looking for a job. And there's plenty of franchises out there, you know, who hire, you know, individuals, you know, who may or may not have ever sold a business, may never have owned a business. They just think it's a good idea. Hey, you know, it'd be fun to sell businesses. They could come from commercial real estate. They could come, you know, from corporate America. They could come from, you know, but what, you know, what life experiences do they have to help them relate, you know, to a business owner? You know, there's some who do, and there's vast majority who don't. How many of them have ever, you know, managed their own profit and loss and balance sheet? You know, there's many who haven't. So, you know, hey, they paid the $50,000 for a franchise. They took a couple of days of training, you know, and now, you know, somebody is calling them up, a business owner, not really knowing the extent of their background and, you know, trusting them for probably the most important, you know, transaction of their lifetime in many cases. So it's a risky bucket. I'm not saying that there aren't really highly qualified franchise brokers out there. There are. But, you know, my advice is to really, really look at who the individual is you're working with, what knowledge, what experience, what results have they obtained, you know, in their career. You know, very important. And if you've got, you know, a valuable asset that you're trying to sell and it's funding your retirement or funding a good part of your retirement, you know, you better make sure you're working with a professional.
Okay. That's one category.
That's one category. Okay. You know, the second bucket, you know, are, you know, I'd say are, you know, brokers or agents who have, you know, sold a business of their own and, you know, they jump into the, you know, the arena with, you know, the person probably who sold their business as an agent, you know, and they have a mentor and they learn for them. And, you know, those folks, you know, have the empathy with the buyers and sellers. You know, I'd equate myself in that bucket. You know, probably, you know, are going to have at least some level of experience in selling businesses. Again, it may only be one, right? So it's very important, you know, to kind of that background and experience of, you know, the former business owner who's bought and sold. And I'd say the third bucket, you know, is basically your corporate person who, you know, was buying a job, may have done some M&A work or may have done, you know, some financial work or, you know, maybe a former CPA, you know, who's been involved in sales. You know, those buckets are people with, you know, skills and knowledge. Again, they may or may not have sold a business before in their lives. They may have not have, you know, walked in a buyer's or a seller's shoes before. Again, it's important, you know, just, you know, what's the level of knowledge and experience of your broker? Critical. I've got a guide on my website. If anybody wants to pull it up, it's like, here's, you know, I think I called it the ultimate guide to selecting a business broker, but it's got all the qualifications that I think someone should look for.
I love it. And we'll have a link in the show notes for that. I think it's always good. I think it's a fascinating thing. And this is what's blown my mind since day one of learning about the industry that you're in, is that at most, like you said, you have to get a real estate license to be a business broker, which is not related in any way. And then in most states, you don't even need that. You just show up. And for such an important transaction with so many consequences for not doing it right, either it doesn't sell or you don't get the price or some terrible terms or things like that. Like, it's just amazing to me the lack of requirements to be called a business broker and then the lack of awareness by business owners to know the differences and how to pick, right? They just don't know. So I love that guide that you've got on there.
Yeah, you brought up a good point there, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, folks who kind of cross over from residential or commercial real estate because they have the licensing to sell, like in a state like Florida or Georgia. There's 15 states that require it, but it's 180 degrees. You know, prepping a business for sale is so different than prepping a property for sale. It's an entirely different animal. I mean, you're starting with the financial acumen that you need because people are buying cash flow. So they're looking at the numbers. So if you don't understand P&Ls, you don't understand balance sheets, you haven't operated, you know, a business before and, you know what the typical things that people, you know, hide in a business or expand, you know, in a business,
yeah,
you're probably going to miss things and not value it appropriately. You know, and when it comes to marketing a business, confidentiality, you know, 99% of the time is critical because if your employees find out, they may decide, hey, you know, a new owner's coming in, you know, John down the street has been after me for 15 years to come join his firm. I know John, like John, I can work for John, but I don't know if I can work for a new owner that I don't know. You know, goodbye.
Yeah.
You know, walk out the door. Suppliers, they find out you're for sale. You know, the next thing you know, it's everything COD. They deliver your inventory, you know, order for on, you know, the following Tuesday. And they say, well, you know, your credit's, you know, eliminated. We need a payment today because we think you might be hurting financially because we heard you're for sale. Customers, you know, customers find out you're for sale. They think, oh, you know, maybe the seller is going to be skimping on material or, you know, trying to pocket as much money as he can out the door and won't provide the product or services that we've come to expect. So there's a lot of bad things that can happen if knowledge of a sale gets out to the general public, you know, to that business owner, and especially to the value of that business. So, you know, someone coming from residential real estate or commercial real estate where you throw a sign up and you tell everybody, hey, this is for sale. You know, it's not always a well understood practice.
I'm laughing because there's a visual popped in my head for the first time ever thinking about that, like crossover, the realtor puts a sign in the yard, puts it on the listing. Is I'm just imagining a residential realtor showing up at a business with some homemade cookies and a sign out front, like treating it like an open house for a sale, like, you know, an open house on a Sunday, which of course they wouldn't do, but just thinking about like how different the strategy is. You're talking about the confidentiality, you know, and to the point of like being very strict on even who you share the SIM with, because you've got to make sure that it's a person you want to share it with. And then, you know, the details along the way and keeping things as private as possible, where, you know, the confidentiality does get out, can easily kill deals and whole transactions.
It can kill a business. I mean, I've had several calls over the year, but the one that sticks in my mind, a beautiful lady owned a restaurant up in Northport, Florida. It was a long standing restaurant. Her husband had passed away, and she was operating it on a day-to-day basis, you know, after he passed. She was involved, but not that highly involved. And one day, I used to send out postcards all the time when I first got started. And she got one of my postcards because it was a nice restaurant. It was probably doing, you know, $2 million a year in revenue. And I got a call from her and she said, my postcard said, hey, you know, I've got buyers for your business. Because if I'd sell a restaurant, I would send them out to restaurant owners. Right? Because I would collect a bunch of buyers for restaurants. You know, I've got some buyers for your business. You know, if you're thinking about selling, you know, call me here and let's discuss, you know, what I can do for you. So she calls me up and she says, do you have buyers for my business? And I said, yep, I just sold a restaurant in Cape Coral, Florida. You know, it was a, you know, large restaurant, waterfront restaurant. You know, just sold another one up your way in Inglewood, Florida, large restaurant, waterfront restaurant. You know, tell me about yours. And she tells me about her restaurant. And I'm like, okay, great. You know, so here's the process. After you feed me some information and I value the business, you know, we go to a listing agreement. She goes, well, I already got one of those. And I said, oh, okay. I'm like, so are you asking me to contact your broker? And she said, well, if you've got buyers for my restaurant, I'd like you to bring one right away because my restaurant is just tanky. And I'm like, what? And she goes, yeah. She goes, ever since I engaged the broker, you know, my business is down about 35%. And I'm like, well, why would that be? And come to find out, she engaged a commercial realtor who put a big, huge sign out in front of it that said for sale. So people didn't think the restaurant was open. They were just driving by it.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, you need to call that guy and you need to tell him to take his sign down immediately. And as soon as that sign's down, I guarantee you, your numbers are going to pop back up, which they did.
Yeah, because if you're, you know, selling commercial or leasing commercial property, you want everybody to know about it.
Huh. So we did. We did engage her after that failure.
That's wild. So one of the things you've told me in the past when we've spoke is talking about risk and how risk affects price, right? And mitigating risk and managing that with the price, especially when it comes to evaluation and what buyers are looking for. You know, I'm sure this extends from your days when you were dealing with Ford and, you know, everything since then. So talk about that when it comes to like a business, it's going to be for sale, obviously low risk business versus a high risk, or factors that are in it where that affects the value, but also like the marketability, the market price, the pool of buyers.
You know, well, one of the things we do in the prep phase is we try to identify where those, you know, points of risk are. And, you know, the one that you see a lot of times, you know, are just, you know, weak or sloppy financials. Right. So if a buyer really doesn't know what, you know, it doesn't have confidence in the cash flow that's coming for the business, or the bank doesn't have confidence in the cash flow that's, you know, coming from the business, you know, they're going to, you know, whittle that price down. You know, other things that we see, you know, maybe, you know, the business being very, very owner centric. You know, I mentioned the landscaping company with the architect who's doing all the designs. You know, he's doing the project management. You know, that's relatively high risk. If you don't have those qualifications, it's very high risk. If you do have those qualifications, you know, that de-risks the deal and you're going to be willing to pay more for it. But for someone without that, I don't know why they would buy it. But if they did, it would, you know, they have to look at it and go, wow, this is really risky for me. I probably would pay less. You know, there's other things like, you know, having, you know, a business with key employees. If those key employees are not under some type of contract or non-compete or something of that nature, you know, that introduces risk. You know, businesses that have shown a steady decline, you know, in revenues or profitability, you know, would appear risky, you know, to a buyer. So there's a lot of things, you know, that we look at. I think there's like a list of 60 some, you know, that I have. I don't look at all of them all the time because some of them are, you know, specific to different types, specific types of businesses. But you do look at some of those risk factors and say, hey, yeah, this is a problem in this business. We need to correct it. Great example one. HVAC company. Seller was running a lot of personal items through the business. A ton. Basically, he was making his books look like, you know, there was no profit in it for past five years.
Wow.
Ask him if he had kept very clear, clean records of what he had done, and he hadn't. I did the valuation on his business and I came out at roughly, I was thinking it, you know, might have been about $500,000. And he said, this business should be worth, you know, well over $2 million. And I'm like, I'm not disagreeing. And anyway, I redid his books if he had done them clean versus having, you know, them done the way he did them, which a bank would never accept, a buyer would never accept. The multiple on what he had lost versus what he saved in taxes. I ran that number and it was 37 times. So for every dollar he saved in taxes by hiding expenses, he lost $37 of value.
Wow. That's wild. So what do you do in that scenario? What happened with that one? What's the you know, the good tale, the cautionary advice, you know, to business owners?
Well, he wasn't happy, obviously, and he wasn't ready to list it. So I gave him, you know, a 2-year project to run everything through his books and pay his taxes. And I said, after those 2 years, and once we're into the third year, we could list the business for sale and get you the value out, get the value out of it, you know, that you think it's worth, you know. But unfortunately, you know, you're not starting the process to sell now. You're going to have to wait, fix your books. So I think we're probably getting, this is probably year two right now.
Yeah.
At the end of the year, he'll have clean books.
So that's the key, right? And I hear this a lot where, you know, business brokers just would love business owners to be thinking about it 1, 2, 3 years in advance instead of, I'm ready to sell now for X, Y, and Z reason, and then having homework to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a a lot of the deals I've done, I think, you know, I'm well over 300 now that I've done in Florida. But if I look back, and I would say probably 50% of the deals that I've done were of that nature. It was, I talked to them, you know, maybe a year or two in advance of it going to market. We clean some things up, you know, and then they go to market. Mm-hmm. But there is, you know, the other 50%, you know, who, you know, are like, hey, I need to be done with this, you know, within 12 months. Can we go to market right now?
So on that note, a little bit different angle, because I know this is something you and I have also spoken about, and I know this is a big one for you, so I'm super excited about this, is where the messaging out there sometimes from people who are good at marketing is easy sale of a business. You don't need a business broker. We'll help you. We've got buyers. It's really easy. You know, thinking about those that, you know, like maybe that lady with the restaurant or the 50% that are ready right now. And so let's talk about that. The individuals or the companies out there that are pushing this, like, don't hire a broker. I have a buyer for you. You don't need them taking your commission and, you know, we'll help you exit, or we've got buyers. So let's run with that. What comes to mind in that category?
Yeah, a couple of things. I'm going to start with this. And that is, I see these ads pop up constantly, especially on places like Facebook, right? There, and there's a woman out of Vietnam that has one. You know, there's a couple others, you know, that are promoting this. And they say, skip the broker, skip the commission. You're not, right? You're just dealing with the buyer's broker. So what she's done is she's gone out and she's signed up buyers to get into her program. And then she's looking, you know, does this advertising to bring in sellers. So now you've got a buyer who's been brought into her program, trained by her. What do you think she's trained them on? She's trained them on how to negotiate the best price, you know, with a naive and under and non-represented seller who does not have a broker on their side. So what do you think is going to happen? The business is being brokered. Someone is paying a commission. It's coming off the sale price. If you're not represented, you don't have anyone at bat for you or sticking up for you or telling you what the true value of your business is, and you're entering a negotiation, you're going to lose.
So real quick, before you go on to more of it, though, is if you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode. So real quick, before you go on to more of it, though, is Eric, how much of the time do you think it is where the business owner, because they've made it so far, 10, 20, 30 years, overcome every obstacle and challenge that's come their way, they've grown something that is sellable, they think, oh, I could just sell my business on my own as well, in the same frame of where someone's like, I don't need a realtor, I'll just sell my own house. Like, how much of it is that? How much of it is good marketing and whoever gets to that business owner first?
Well, I don't know that most business owners think that they can sell themselves, because most of them have never done it, right? So I don't know how many sellers are actually trying themselves. I don't think it's a lot, especially in Florida, where business brokerage is pretty well known. I do think there are, you know, individual sellers who, you know, may list with, say, a residential real estate agent or a commercial real estate agent because they offer them a cheaper commission, right? But I'm going to be expensive, but I get results. And what are those results? I can give you an example of one who a group that tried to sell their business, you know, on their own. It's a dental practice owned by two clinicians. They had two other clinicians that worked for them. So four dentist office doing really good numbers, over $6 million a year in revenue. They were approached by Heartland Dental. Heartland Dental is a formula buyer. They purchase practices all over the country. One of the largest dental service organizations out there. Their formula is basically 125% of, collections. So, you know, if you made $1 million in your dental practice, they'll give you $1.25 million. That's it. That's their formula. Yeah. They took a look at this practice and they offered them $4.7 million. And one doctor said, geez, we should get a second opinion. The other said, let's just sign on the dotted line. Their CPA, oddly enough, the dental office is right next door to the CPA. Hey, can you come in and talk to these guys? They're thinking about selling their business. They just want to hear, you know, a second opinion. So I went in, I talked to them. I said, give me your numbers. I think 4.7 million is way too. And so we went through the numbers. I said, I think I can get you quite a bit more. And then they go, well, how much more? And I said, I think I can get you anywhere from, you know, $7 to $8 million. And they're like, what? I'm like, I think I can get you $7 to $8 million, but you know, I can't promise you anything. Give me your numbers. We'll start going through the process. So they gave me their numbers. They said, yeah, but you know, give Heartland the first shot at it. I'm like, happy to do it. No problem. And if Heartland does it, you know, I'll pay, you know, you only owe me the commission on the difference that I get you extra.
Nice. Right?
And they're like, okay. So we went through the process of preparing the dental practice for sale. Dental practices are not the same animal as just a regular business. It really takes someone who has knowledge and specializations to some extent in dentistry. I've got a lot of family and friends who are dentists. So it's something that, you know, through osmosis over the years, I picked up on what's it for, you know, especially the buyers. So we went through the process, got the information down, presented it back to Heartland, and they said, wow, this is really well prepared. You know, we like what we see. We'll up our offer to $5.4 million. So went back to the two dentists and said, okay, I got you. I got you from 4.7 to 5.4, but I think that's a joke. Worth way more. We should go to market. And they're like, you know, one was like, well, let's just sign on the dotted line. The other one's like, no. I think we should take it to market, you know, because we can always come back to the 5.4. I said, exactly. So we took it to market. We got 7.4 million. Now, of course, I got commission on the entire 7.4 million, but my commission was paid for multiple times over.
Oh yeah,
many times. So, but that's what happens with, you know, business sellers who are not represented. That's what can happen. And you know, Heartland was very experienced at buying businesses. You know, these companies, you know, that coach and train buyers are very experienced at buying companies. So the same process and the same, you know, is at play in the acquisition of a non-represented seller who signs up with them and say, yeah, you know, great. I'll skip the broker's commission. I'll save money. Hmm. You don't sell.
No, and it's one of those things I think so many business owners don't understand the perspective of it, which is what you just said, which is so important, but often missed, is that the seller, it's the probably the first time, it's probably the only time they'll go through that process. The buyer has been coached and is probably analyzed and made offers on multiple businesses. So they are a better skilled buyer than the seller is as a seller.
Absolutely. And it all goes back to, you know, what's the value the business broker brings in, you know, into that. It's not just negotiation skills, but it goes back to our risk discussion. It's about taking a look at the business, de-risking it by properly preparing it for sale. It's doing the extra work, you know, for example, you know, a very thorough, you know, confidential information memorandum, which gives a buyer confidence in the business. It's, you know, correctly recasting the financial statements so buyers and bankers understand exactly what those, you know, financial statements are telling them. You know, it's, you know, generating confidence in the buyer so they'll pay more.
Yeah. Makes sense. Now, over the years, you've had the brokerage, you've hired brokers, you've built a team. What's that process been like for you? What is the structure that you have? What do you think is a winning formula? Obviously, looking behind you again, the wall of plaques, something's working. And so how do you build that? How do you transfer that to other brokers? Let's talk about that.
You know, it's not easy. I mean, I have a different model than a lot of others. There are a lot of brokerages out there where the broker doesn't do deals. You know, what they do is they help their team do the deals. I think, you know, down the road, I'll probably transition into that, but I like doing the deals too much. So what I do is you know, my model is more of an eat what you kill model. So, you know, all my brokers are incentivized to go out and get their own listings, do their own marketing. But they pay me a lot less than they would pay, you know, your typical brokerage. A lot of them start at like 40%. I'm nowhere near that. So do I make money on them? A little bit. Do I enjoy coaching and teaching? My parents were teachers. So I do a little bit of it. Probably never enough. But you know, the older, more experienced brokers I've brought on, you know, that have, you know, really good skills are doing really, really well. Probably have made some mistakes over the years and bringing on people that weren't, you know, either weren't highly skilled or highly experienced. So looking back, I think, you know, the litmus test for deciding who I bring on has gotten tougher. Yeah. I wouldn't say, tougher by a small amount. I would say tougher by a considerable amount. You know, because growth is fine, but you know, at a certain point, you know, growth for growth's sake isn't worth my time and effort.
And it's fascinating. As somebody who's also hired a lot of people in the past, mostly sales, marketing, operations people inside companies, like, you have enough experiences where you just start getting tougher and tougher because you know what it takes, you know what you're looking for, and you know the cost of training and then still losing someone, you know, and you know, all that work that goes into it. If you look at animals that have very few young at a time, like large mammals, humans, it's like you're putting all the eggs in one basket, like it's got to work out. And so it can be really tough, I'm sure, in your position where, you know, you bring on somebody or group of people and they don't.
Yeah. And there's people, they see oh, I want to be a business broker. I've looked into it. You know, it sounds fascinating. I'd love to do it.
Yeah, I can do that. Seems easy. I like businesses. Yeah.
I owned a business. I sold a business. You know, so I know, I understand the process. Okay, great. You know, but what, you know, a lot of them just don't realize is it is a lot of work and it is incredibly difficult to succeed. The hours behind those plaques are not sane.
Yeah. Well, and that's the part that people don't realize, right? Like I was talking to a broker yesterday and, you know, we were talking about deals. It's like, yeah, I 800 hours into a deal. Like it's just maddening, right?
Mm-hmm. And there's no guarantee of getting the deal to the finish line. So there are times when you spend, you know, countless hours on getting a deal and then it blows up at the end for, you know, reasons beyond your control.
Yeah. 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 That's wild. And it's gotta be tough. Well, I know earlier you mentioned the guide for obviously selecting a business broker on your site. I'm going to put some links in the show notes. Eric, I appreciate you being on the show. I can't wait till we do a part two. There's so many more things I want to talk to you about marketing, about the deal that got away, because we talked about one in particular that still frustrates you and upsets you because it was unnecessary. It didn't have to die, but it did. And then I want to talk about the standard after show stuff. But for people tuning in, you know, the best ways, again, all these links will be in the show notes. People can find you. So Edison, B-A, ericjagall.com. You're on LinkedIn, Eric Jagall. And then your email will be in the show notes. They can find you. You're pretty active on LinkedIn. The website's great. So always recommend that. And Eric, thank you for being on the show, sharing all this. And, you know, again, I say this about a lot of the guests, but I appreciate the fact that you wanted to come on here and then share with the goal of just helping everybody in the transactional sphere, just understand how to just, you know, be successful at it. And I just appreciate you know, a lot of work going into those plaques. And I know some other brokers who have lots of plaques that don't want to share with anybody. And I appreciate you being here.
Hey, no problem. I really appreciate your time too. And enjoyed being on the show, and I can't wait for session number two.
We'll do part two for sure. And for everyone tuning in, make sure to connect with Eric, follow Eric, just research, read, you know, my biggest mission is now just to promote the professionals out there, the high quality brokers. Eric mentioned like the three different types of brokers. And, you know, he put himself in that category of, I had a business, I sold it, and, you know, I do this. But I think there's so much more to that, where there's like this high quality level. And, you know, I just want to help everybody out there understand that and know parts of the transaction. So please make sure to check out his information. We appreciate you being here, tuning into the show. Hopefully you learned a lot. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.